if you've done much with sailing craft?
No, not too much.
Not too much.
I've owned a number of them, but most of the boats I've designed were big diesel yachts.
Uh-huh.
Oops, there are my damn ropes here.
Mr. Gregory, let me ask you just some questions that John Najar set out for me, most of which you've answered, by the way. But let me ask a couple. He said, your relationship with Mr. Edsel Ford was a very good one. You had a good rapport. He found in you qualities that he couldn't find from anyone else. You appreciated his sensitivity and taste in design. Were there any other people involved in this relationship? Were you pretty much one-on-one?
Yeah, I mean, as far as the activity was concerned?
Yes,
Yeah, that's there was no one else involved. I mean, like I say, Joe Galam used to be on the Ford Ward.
Yeah.
And
right.
After Joe, well, of course, he and Edsel went about the same time, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But then, of course, the post-war, we know about that.
Mm-hmm.
But during the 30s and 40s, no, the whole thing was very simple. We just had a small staff, and
mm-hmm.
Mr. Ford knew most of the boys in there by their first name, and it was all just a very friendly, mm-hmm. folksy arrangement.
You mentioned that while he had great taste and an eye for a pleasing design, he himself did not give you any indication that he had design history.
Like I mentioned, but many people have suggested, or they've read or written that Mr. Ford had sketches and this, and I've never
okay.
seen a
mm-hmm.
sketch that Mr. Ford had ever made, and I presume that if he made them, he would have shown them to me mm-hmm. in some form.
I think the ones that have survived are mostly juvenile.
I imagine. I don't
yes.
know. I've heard of, you know, that he did sketching at home, and
yeah.
I knew he was interested in art,
mm-hmm.
but I never, I thought many times, he never brought a sketch to me or never took a pencil in his hand. I've never seen him describe anything with a pencil.
Mm-hmm.
But I know he was intensely interested in artwork in every form.
Mm-hmm.
He was an excellent critic.
That's it, yeah.
A man doesn't have to be a designer as such
mm-hmm.
to point out something and say, look, the hood line doesn't look right, or I think the window is too wide, or
mm-hmm.
He doesn't have to have the ability to take a pencil like I have, but I can well understand
mm-hmm.
Working with a man like Mr. Ford, he knew when something looked right, see?
Mm-hmm.
And I used to tell people, well, he doesn't have to design the car
mm-hmm.
as such, per se.
Mm-hmm.
Working with him, if it looks right to him, I have a feeling it looks right to me.
Mm-hmm.
And if he thought, if it looks right to me, unless there was something conspicuously wrong, why, it was all right with him.
Mm-hmm. He was a good editor.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. That's
mm-hmm.
right.
Yes.
And by the same token, I would rarely ever suggest anything to him. Many people have asked me why I didn't to do something radical.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I had a feeling that he'd be offended if I suggested that sort of thing to him.
You indicated earlier he was basically conservative.
Oh, ironclad conservative.
Yes.
I mean, you
mm-hmm.
just couldn't, he wouldn't give it any time at all.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason he didn't care for John Jarder.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't care for people like Ray Lowy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget, Ray Lowy had bought a Continental. And he'd done some things to it. He cut the roof off and he made a sort of a town car out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And he put a big porthole in the back of it.
Mm-hmm.
And he came out there one day after lunch, and he had a chauffeur dressed up in Fifth Avenue style with the leather boots
mm-hmm.
and a pink uniform on,
mm-hmm.
pink and a big sort of a French style high hat. Mr. Ford came out the side door of my office, and he went like that, and Lowy, you know, was all full of perfume.
Mm-hmm.
It was a real. As Tom Hibbert used to say, woo-hoo.
Yeah.
And they say in Paris, he said, he always go, woo-hoo.
You say Lowy was gay, do you think?
He was reputed to be.
Yeah.
I don't know. But,
yeah, but
he was that type.
Mm-hmm.
He would have passed for that. But a very clever salesman, I guess, and a very talented. There again, I don't think he ever drew anything up, but he hired smart designers, and he had a good way of putting things over. I know he did a lot of work for Studebaker and the cigarette people, and, you know, going down the line. He made a lot of money, I guess. Well, anyway, took one look at this thing. And he turned around and he says, Bob, I've seen enough. Let's go inside. But he just passed the time of the day, and, you know.
Yeah.
So nice it was for him to come out and show him the car. But I couldn't picture him working with a man like that at all, no.
Incidentally, you mentioned your Citroën a few minutes ago.
Oh, yeah.
Did you know that André Citroën visited Henry Ford at the engineering lab about 1928?
Yeah. There's a funny little story about that little car. While I had it in Detroit, I used to park it over in the National Bank garage across Cadillac Square.
Right.
And I was going up one of the upper ramps there, and the French Citroën company were dealing with Bud. You know, the Bud people engineered that car, and they had a plant in Detroit, and they were in the process, or they were always continuously in the process of dickering to use American components, you know, transmission parts and various things they could buy in this country. So they had two or three French mechanics there, and they had a couple of Citroën cars there, front wheel drives, you know, they used to build in the day. And I went up there and I saw that little car of mine. Oh, the little Citroën, look, come show the little Citroën. And got to know these boys pretty well, you know, and they said, oh, you know, work, you want to tune them up, fix them up. So, boy, they took that little car and they tuned it all up nice for me, you know. That was their basic little car in Paris, you know, in France.
Yeah.
And that was kind of a cute arrangement. Oh, gee, they love that little car. First one they'd seen, you know, since they left Paris. They came out of the house one day and, oh, boy, they ground the valves and they did all kinds of work. They had special metric tools, you know. You couldn't get metric wrenches in this country in those days.
No.
And that was a real tie-in. That was cute. They were real cute little guys. And they had their jumpsuits and their bottles of wine up there, you know. And they had a regular little shop there that had a little bay that they'd rented, you know. Chain hoist, they could change parts on the car there, and it was kind of handy. But that was a great little car. My Lord, I drove that back to Long Island again that June. And I took the original fenders off of it. And I put Ford Model A fenders on it.
Oh.
Paid $2.50 a piece for them at the Ford dealer down on West Grand Boulevard. $2.50. $10 I bought four fenders, and the running boards were $1.50 a piece.
Incredible.
$15 I bought all the sheet metal.
Incredible.
Yeah, I got pictures of it over here. You want to see it? I think it's a...
Mr. Najar wanted me to ask you a few questions. He remembers you fondly, and... he said he learned a lot from you in those early days.
We worked close together, those boys. And
he said you had a good esprit de corps in the early days.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was necessary.
Yes, it was. He says, he mentions that you and Ed Martin would work side by side, because, as you mentioned earlier, you were a working designer. You weren't one of those who sat in the office. And
I like to get out and where the activities
work on the boards, right.
Yeah.
And Mr. Martin had told him that Mr. Ford would visit you right at your drawing board. He'd come up and take a look and say, I like that and I don't like that.
Yeah. Well, lots of times, you know, as I mentioned, that Edsel Ford liked things that came to mind and were drawn up just off the cuff, so to speak. He didn't care for formality.
Right.
He wasn't interested in fancy drawings.
That's interesting.
And he was really charmed when I could just take an old blueprint and sketch up a hood on him, which, you know, it was real quick, like cartoon fashion.
Right.
And he loved that. And I knew he'd always accept something that was done quick like that. But he didn't care anything about fancy airbrush pictures.
Isn't that interesting?
No. He just liked to, he might say, oh, well, how about make this a little longer? Make this a little thicker in here, something like that, see? That's how we'd arrive at a design.
Would you ever consciously say, no, Mr. Ford, we shouldn't do it that way?
Well, yeah, if I felt that the proportions were good.
Yeah.
Sure. Then I'd make a little sketch of it, make it a little oval and sort of thicker, and he usually agreed it was nice, or in many instances his suggestion was good.
That's great, yeah.
That's the way it was, and he, for instance, wait, look at the belt line on a car, you know, where there was room for opinion as to proportion of door openings or window openings or maybe a roof line.
Mm-hmm.
And he might look at it and say, would it do any harm to round that a little more or something like that, see? Mm-hmm. And that's the way it worked, yeah.
And that's really the best way to work.
Yeah. No, there was no knock-down, drag-out arguments. It had all been one-sided anyway. I mean, he was boss man.
But all very gentlemanly.
Oh, yeah. No problems at all.
That's good. John remembers you had a great crew there.
We did. We sure
and
did.
And he gave me some of the names, which you remember very well. He said the design department that you, your design department was located at the south end of the of the engineering laboratory.
Yeah.
No smoking, and chapel music was piped in every morning for 15 minutes.
Well, that was not exactly.
Not exactly.
We happened to be next door to old man Ford's dance. He had an old-fashioned dance group.
Yes. Uh-huh.
You know, with the old music and Bouncing Ben Lovett.
That was in the engineering
lab. In the engineering lab. And it was just partitioned off with a glass wood partition from my department, see?
Uh-huh.
So they'd play hymn music, or they'd play gypsy music, old man Ford, like this Hungarian gypsy music, you know. And
the
Cymbalon. Cymbalon, yeah.
Yes.
He had a gypsy string orchestra, you know. And he hired them. He had five or six of them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And they stayed right there all the time.
And they were always playing.
That's right. Every afternoon, why, they'd have this band music, and every now and then, you remember who was the old guy that had the gong, you know, and they struck out? And
Major Bowes.
Major Bowes. Yeah. Every now and then, one of the boys would hit a piece of metal and bong!
Take him away. Yeah. Well, he mentioned some of your group. I'm sure you'll remember Walter Krupp.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Who did interior.
Yeah. Walt and I were good buddies there.
Great buddies.
Yeah, when I was single up there, Walt and I, we went out of the town two, three nights a week. And that was the time. Walt, we'd go off on a boat weekend, you know. I kept the boat up there.
Yes.
No, Walt died about 25 years ago, I guess.
That long, huh? You mentioned John Walters,
Johnny Walters,
did your instruments.
That's right, instrument panels, and
And
a great group of boys.
Were they? He mentioned Bernie Cole.
Yeah.
Or Bruno.
Bruno. He was German.
German, yes.
Bruno, when the war came on, Bruno had, his name was Quadzi or something originally. He'd come into this country through Canada. And he immediately, when war was declared with Germany, 41, one of those.
Yes.
He wanted to go right back to Germany.
Oh.
To have family and interests and whatnot there in Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked him out of it. I said, gee, you've got a safe berth here for the war, and think twice about that. So he finally decided to stay. I got him to stay, We could only use him on, you know, unclassified work.
Mm-hmm.
But Bruno was good. He was a very, very intelligent gent.
He worked in sheet metal?
Just general design. More or less ornamental work. He designed lampshades at one time.
Mm-hmm. And, oh, really?
For a lampshade manufacturer. That brings up a funny little instance. Tom Hibbard went out to interview a prospective illustrator in the lobby one day, Tom, we were looking for an additional illustrator, and I said, "What kind of work does he do, Tom?" He said, "You know, I tell you, he had the most beautiful ice cream cones." He said, "I can almost taste them." And he said, "The beautiful hamburgers and chops." He was an advertising illustrator, you know, and he'd drawn up all these goodies, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's marvelous.
Tom had the funniest sense of humor, you know. He said, "Gee, I could smell a hamburger before I got it." It was so good.
But he didn't hire him.
No, he wouldn't have been suitable for that.
Yeah, right.
But
that's marvelous. We've talked about Willis.
Wagner.
Bill Wagner, yeah.
Yeah.
He worked on...
Taillight Bill.
Taillight Bill, yeah. Right, uh-huh, yeah. Ed Martin, of course.
Oh, Ed worked on a little bit of everything.
Yeah, he was planning that.
Ed was a good draftsman, and he kept track of shop activities and made up production charts and things of that kind.
Right. And we mentioned Martin Rigitko.
Well, Martin was a head draftsman. He was
a very good one.
Big Austrian, yeah.
Was he?
He'd been with Brunn for years, you know, head body draftsman for Brunn in Utica.
Did you know Herman Brunn Jr., by the way?
Yeah.
Pretty well?
Yeah.
He's still very much alive.
No, he was with Willoughby, Rigitko.
Rigitko, oh, that's right. Oh.
Brunn, I hired young Brunn.
Did you,
Herman? Worked for Herman for a couple of years.
Did
yeah.
you? Uh-huh. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they folded up, you know, building bodies in Buffalo.
Yes.
He came to Detroit. I got him to come there.
Good.
He's good.
Yeah.
He had a speech impediment. He was a... do you have a meeting?
Yes.
Yeah. He had, you know, he had a sort of a... I don't know whether he ever got over it or not, but he's an awful nice chap. And
he's still very much going strong out near San Diego.
Is that what was he retired from the court
now? Retired, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, do you remember Jim Lynch?
Oh, sure. Jim was my old shop boy. Jim, anything Jim could make anything.
John remembers that from time to time, Jim Lynch and one or two of the men would leave the design department early in the morning and return just before quitting time. He said they would work on boat repair at the Edsel Ford display.
Yeah, yeah. They'd go out to Edsel Ford's place and work on his speedboat out there.
On a speedboat.
Yeah. Jim was good at that sort of thing. And then there was a mechanic, the head mechanic down, Eddie, what the hell was his name? Not Eddie Jackson, but down at the, he finally became head of the test track. But he was an aircraft mechanic.
Down
at the airport there, Ford. And he finally had charge of the wind tunnel activity, you know, and the test activity.
Oh, yes.
And he went up with me to Marine City one day. I bought a powerboat up there. It had a great big monster engine and a 180 horsepower engine in those days, as long as this room had. And the boat had been stored up there. I bought it up in Marine City, and he went up and got the engine going, and we came down the river with it about 25 knots down to Trenton. It was the only trip I ever took with that great big enormous engine, and I took it out and replaced it with another engine.
Dick Beneke.
Oh, old Dick Beneke, yeah.
Dick Beneke, yeah.
He was an old Dutchman, an old German. Old Dick was the first man I had in the department that we got away from Briggs. He was a good clay modeler.
Yes.
And when we set the department up, I finagled to come over there. He worked for me on that front end of that Zephyr, you know, on the Lincoln Zephyr thing when I was over there.
That's right, you mentioned.
And Dick had done plaster modeling in Germany and cathedrals, all the angels, you know, and all the doves flying around, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. He was a wonderful plaster modeler, and he was headed all our modeling activity there.
Uh-huh. Good man.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. His reference to Beneke, he and Beneke and the draftsman, you just mentioned his name, Rigitko.
Rigitko, yes.
Yeah. They both spoke very, very broken English.
Mm-hmm.
And Beneke had said, "I got them Hungarian, that honky there." They were both older men, you know, and oh boy, they'd get the gun, you know, in their hands and arguing with each other about a dimension or some damn thing. I had to break it up, say, Christ, they're old enough to be my daddy.
incredible.
And old Joe Galland would come in, and Joe would come in and he said, that sheen, you know, that shine, that sheen. Old Beneke would say, "Look, that damn Hungarian, he can't say shine, he says sheen." He can't say shine, he has to say sheen.
That's marvelous. John mentioned that the innovations that you came up with, the bridge to facilitate clay modeling, which he also mentions that you came up with the tower.
Yes,
a 10 to 12 foot platform. That's right.
Observation from the top to get body shape worked out.
That was a marvelous invention.
Yeah.
Now that you also picked up from boat design.
Just put on. It was an observation stand, so we could check a car from the top. So if looking out of the second story window, see if it looked good, you know. See.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you could see lines and how fair they were, you know.
That's great. Yeah.
I think this is going to be a losing battle.
Oh, you can get it going.
What about your friend Francis? Francis,
what's the matter? Oh, Frank Francis.
What about Frank Francis?
He was a Polish boy.
He was so cute.
And he had an unpronounceable Polish name. I forget what it was. And he's going to have his name changed.
Really?
Walt Crook was a kind of a court jester. Walt Crook was always practical joking somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And Walt would make up a list of old Throckmorton and some Francis-style names, you know,
mm-hmm.
and he'd
right.
present them to Francis. And Francis was a serious boy, you know, and he took these very seriously. He'd bring the list to me and see if I approved of any of those names. He wanted to change his name from whatever this Polish name was. I've forgotten. It was one of those ski things, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And finally, we went a couple of weeks on this thing. I said, "Hello, Francis. Why the hell did you call you Frank Francis? Call your name's the name Francis.
Mm-hmm.
Double Francis. See? Double F."
Mm-hmm.
He said, "That's what I'm going to do, Mr. Gregory. Thank you very much." So I named him Francis. he said, "Mr. Crook, he confuses me." So he said, "Some of those names are very nice." He said, "But he says I think he's making fun of me." Walt and I would get help. He was there at that meeting last time Harry and I went up there.
Yes, he had dinner with us.
Oh, really?
He was in that office.
That's marvelous.
Yeah, he was a handle office records and that sort of thing, you know.
What did you say about it? I mean, he said when we were there that Frank or Francis, or whatever you call him, you put on weight. He said, "I can't remember when he'd stand in the sunshine, he looked like a smiler." Full of strawberry pop.
He was real skinny. Now he's got big jowls and he's kind of filled
serious.
Out.
It's so cute you say these things to him, you know. It was a very serious thing with him, really.
Oh, there was a lot of kidding around in there, you know, we always kidding each other.
Ed Martin, as you know, did a piece on the birth of the Continental some years ago.
On the birth of it?
Yeah.
I think he did in one of the papers.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was in that old Cars thing. I think I have a copy of it.
Mm-hmm.
You have a copy of it there?
I have his original copy.
Draft of it, uh-huh.
But it's pretty much the way you've said it. He says, "I remember the day the car came over from the Lincoln plant. It was quite an event in the styling department. The car was painted yellow and had special hubcaps."
Mm.
He said it was a beauty.
Yellow, no, that wasn't the one.
That wasn't the one?
He's mistaken.
Yeah.
I had a yellow Continental.
Was that it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That number two car was yellow, the one of mine.
I think he's talking about the number two car.
Yeah.
What do you think about today's design? Are you happy with it?
I think some of these small cars are very cleverly done. I think especially
mm-hmm.
the Chryslers have done a real nice job on that car. They're
mm-hmm.
neat and nicely
right.
tailored. And some of these so-called, what do you call them, enthusiast cars.
Yes, right.
These humped up things in the rear, you know,
mm-hmm.
and all shovel nose. I think some of them are terrible looking.
Yes.
But they're not my taste at all. I couldn't get any. I realize people, we have a class of people today, these young, what they call them, young yuppies.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's their type of car, and their tastes run that way.
Right.
But I can't really, I can't get watery mouth over any of those cars, really. I mean, they come from a different era. I think some of the, some of those little cars are quite smart. Some of that Ford, one of those new Ford models is quite nice, except I think the front grille is too pinched.
Yeah.
You know, they've rounded the corners off. I think the profile is quite nice, but the little grille, it's
on the
too,
Thunderbird?
Yeah, it's too pinched.
Yes, right.
It's
yeah.
pinched.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Looks like, you know.
Yeah, right. Along that line, what do you think about the aerodynamics trend today?
Well, let's face it, outside of some of those specialized cars like those Chevy Corvettes and
mm-hmm.
some of those very extreme
yeah.
sports cars, why these cars aren't aerodynamic in any sense.
They just
knock the corners off on them. Matter of
right.
fact, the old yeah. cars of the 30s had much more roundness to them.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And unless you drive your car 80 or 90 miles an hour, that so-called streamlining doesn't mean a thing. About all they've done possibly is reduce some wind noise.
Yes.
We used to experiment with that drip moldings and so on. You take it, you go. And you take a sharp, any sharp object like that, like a end of a drip molding, or a reveal, window reveal, they all set up noises, see? So what they've done on some of these, they flushed the windows up and they've taken the drip moldings off, because all the water will down your neck when you open the door. But the hell with that. They don't mind that. But actually, the so-called streamlining is just like any other sales gimmick. It's a farce. Ah, don't mean a thing.
In along that line, if you were to be the arbiter of today's design, what would you advocate? What direction would you go?
Well, I think what we have today, we have two extremes of design today. We have a pure utility, which you run into in these what do they call these high-rise little car? What do they call that? Chevy, Ford has one. Chevy has one. This type Jeep, closed-in Jeep. What do they call these damn things? Front-wheel drive.
Oh yes. The
Jimmys and
the Broncos.
Bronco.
The
Bronco. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
We have that classic car. Which I think is going to become increasingly popular, or it'll be utility car.
Yes, utility car. Yes.
I look to see the family sedan will be a thing of the past, as we know today, the four-door sedan.
Yeah.
We're gonna have the these little snub-nose
vans,
which I drew up 15 years ago. I'll show you some pictures of them here.
Yeah. Sure.
I can see that trend coming.
Mm-hmm.
And long after I left there, of course.
Yes.
And we're going to have those, very popular for average suburban driving, and we're going to have these super sport things, these shovel nose things with the high ass engine, you know,
right.
for the
wedge front.
Yeah, for the heavy footed yuppies and the comer uppers socially, you know. And then the that's what's going to be. That's all just a utility car.
I think you're right.
The station wagon, I think, is going to be a thing of the past.
The van is taking over.
Yeah. We've driven vans for 20 years.
Sure.
Which an ordinary car wouldn't be of any use to us.
Mm-mm.
No way.
Yeah.
No, that's taken over. And I mean, they put the square feet of usage on the road to best usage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it taking the square that the car takes up. Now, that's the little car I built for.
I want to talk about that in a
number
minute.
Number two,
yes.
Ford. Yeah.
John Nager wanted me to ask you, and I would have asked you this too.
Yeah.
Do you think the Lincoln Continental is an example of your best? Design. In retrospect, it seems.
I guess it's a thing I'm better known for.
Right.
And not that it was just a very small part of our work.
Isn't that interesting?
I mean, when you think of the trucks and the buses and the thousands of other vehicles.
The school bus, yes.
We designed buses and everything Ford made, even the old tractors, the old Ferguson
tractor.
We designed.
Yes.
And It was more spectacular, and it was more of a deviation from conventional design, let's put it that way, for anything that ever went in production.
But looking back on that, it was just another design.
It was just a special built car for Mr. Ford.
Which you had done several.
Plenty of them. But but as it developed, it became very popular, and I guess it'll go down as one of my better known activities.
It'll be a Gregory car.
I mean, I never prized it as a beautiful piece of work. I mean, I always thought that first one was kind of like a razorback, hungry-looking razorback, but I like the second version of it a little better with the heavier fenders, so leave me my own taste.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was the 40, 41.
Yes, I like the grill on the 41, 42,
the one
just for the war, That last grill I didn't care much for, it got away from us. It was a rush job, and I don't know, they had die-cast problems, and we just pushed it through.
You're talking about the 42?
Yeah, 42. Yeah.
The 40-41 was really gorgeous.
Yeah, but the post-war one, 46-48.
46-48.
Yeah, that I didn't care much for.
Didn't care for that. Mm-hmm. Okay. You like the 42.
Yeah.
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 But I think the little Fords we did, considering most of them were just facelift jobs in 39, 40, along through there, we were very limited in what we could do.
Right, yeah.
None of those cars was a straight out, from the ground up design. The old body section, the body shell went back years, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just a matter of a front end, mostly. And this little thing
I wanted to ask you about the turned out to be the first sportsman.
Yeah.
How'd that come about?
Why, we had a Model A chassis on the engineering laboratory floor, just for reference, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Ford wanted it there. And,
yeah.
And when number two came in there, he said, oh, what's this thing doing here? You know, he didn't have any sentiment for anything like that. He said, I like to have a little car to use down on the beach at Southampton. You know, he's a summer place down there with his wife and kids was
right.
Young.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, can you do me up some kind of a little beach wagon, you know, something to use down there, take the kids to the beach.
Sure.
There. So I sketched up this thing and on that Model A chassis we had, and they built it down in the airplane shop down there, you know, which became an experimental body shop down the airport.
Right.
And they used the plywood paneling came from the glider plant up at Iron Mountain.
Oh, the leftover plywood.
Yeah, beautiful mahogany plywood.
Yes.
So we built it up in a little khaki top, and Evie and I had it down here in Florida for years. We used to drive it down to Palm Beach.
He gave it to you eventually, didn't he?
Yeah, he gave it to me.
That's
well,
right.
That's another little story.
Tell me that, Jim.
When we finished the car up, he took it, he sent it down east for him.
Mm-hmm.
I said, Mr. Ford, when you get through with this little thing, I'd like to acquire it.
Mm-hmm.
And like I've done with his daddy, you know, see.
Mm-hmm.
I'd always come by cars that way. I didn't want to put him on the spot or anything. I said, you know, anytime, rather than let it rot in the garage or something, see,
sure.
Or burn it up. He used to destroy some of those cars,
mm-hmm.
Just crush them up.
Oh, yeah.
And so it so happened that the very day that he sent his driver out there with it to my office, Ernie Breach was there, see.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a group standing around there, John Bugis and Ernie Breach and two or three others, and we got all got talking about the car. And Ernie Breach says, oh, I got to have this. I said, oh, boy, that's for me. I got to have this. And I said, sorry, Mr. Breach. I said, it's already mine.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy. You know, from that day on, he...
He never forgave me.
No. I said, Mr. Ford, I spoke for that several months ago.
Mm.
And I said, his driver's just sending it out for me, so I take it home.
Oh,
well, anyway, that's that story.
That's good, yes.
So I had it. I had it down Gros Isle, and then when I came down south and then 46, 47,
mm-hmm.
I brought it down, and we used it back and forth. We had it in Daytona and stored it, you know, in the garage. In the summer, we went off with the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And then we took it down to Palm Beach. We used it down there. Your leg or something.
Building a marvelous fire.
Well, I think I'm going.
Oh, Evie's a good fire builder. And so finally, it became a problem, you know, of keeping it covered and keeping it undercover, and I had to run a garage to keep it, and you couldn't leave it outside.
Oh no, right.
And
it became more difficult all the time.
Mr. Griner came to me one day, a wealthy guy in Ormond Beach. He and his brother owned the Ohio Springfield Road Roller Company.
Mm-hmm.
You know, made steamrollers and all.
Right.
And he was a collector of antique cars and a couple old Rolls Royces and whatnot. He came over one day all dressed in some old khaki clothes.
I was going to say, unfortunately, at the time we weren't aware of
it. I wasn't aware. Well, they didn't make a car like cars like that. And I tried to trade it in Palm Beach with a Ford dealer down there for a regular station wagon.
Really?
And I told them the heritage of it. It had Mr. Ford's license, little thing on the steering column and all. Henry Ford, I still have it.
Do you?
And I said, gee, this thing's worth a hell of a lot of money. It's only one ever built like this.
Right.
That is what it cost. I imagine it cost $50,000 to build it,
mm-hmm.
All hand-built.
And that was at the time just before these things began to be of value.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, I sold it to Mr. Griner, $1,500.
Uh-huh.
And he had it all repainted and retrimmed. And,
really?
And I had it. We drove it up 6-7 years, I guess. Okay. Yeah.
What's happened to it?
Last time I was up in Tennessee somewhere. Marysville, Tennessee.
Really?
It's
still around.
Some fellow has it up there. Yeah.
I'm doubtful as to how well it's cared for now.
It doesn't look very good. We saw a picture of it. It was in a
really?
Barn. There was dust on it. And, it was a beautiful little car.
Think you'd like to try and get it back?
Oh, I don't know what the hell I'd do with it. It rode rough and
you're not really a sentimentalist.
Well, I am. I'd rather have had that speech to that other one.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
The
boat
tail?
No.
Oh,
the
second one.
Yeah, that one I built out of those airplane parts,
oh,
you know.
Oh, yes.
But, this is a cute little car. I mean, gee, if it was somebody out in the country, you know, just wanted to go to the village in the morning, get the mail or something like that, it rode rougher than hell.
Problem was a place to keep it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
that time.
Yeah. See, we didn't have a house, and we had to have a place to store it.
Sure.
And it was fragile, you know. You couldn't leave it outside, and it had a folding khaki top, and mm-hmm. it was too nice a little thing to just to hack around with.
Hmm.
But that was the last Model A the company ever built, as such.
It says here that you you cut out the Model A cowl without making the hood look short. Is that correct?
Well, but the hood panel was new.
Mm-hmm.
The Model A hood broke off here. See,
that's right. Mm-hmm.
Broke off there, but we made a one piece hood. Came right back to the windshield, the cowl here. See, that was all hand built.
Mm-hmm.
But it was standard Model A cowl inside, as I recall. But there was a special floor pan, and outside of the fenders, there wasn't much of a standard stuff you could use on it.
Mm-hmm.
But the old Model A frame was so light.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a couple of bed rails.
Really?
Like a Model T, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was just a little channel, you know, about 3 inches deep.
Mm-hmm.
But we found that when you dropped the tailgate down, and somebody jumped on the tailgate and sat on it, the doors would pop open. It would buckle. Fortunately, we found that out before we turned it over to Henry. And we reinforced the frame,
mm-hmm.
put a piece of channel on the frame or something like that. But well, it was a...
How current was this to the sportsmen that you turned out in the...
Well, I came along... I came along right after this.
Could you say that this was sort of an inspiration?
I'd say so, yeah. Mm-hmm. The idea of a panel to a convertible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Those were very...
We made a handmade one. And this would have been in 46, in the winter of 46, say right around the first of the year,
mm-hmm.
we sent it down, and number 2 Ford used it down in wherever he was, Palm Beach or someplace down there.
Mm-hmm.
And then instead of sending it back to Dearborn, I had him take it up to the branch in Jacksonville. And I came down, my wife was staying in Fort Lauderdale for a month or so, and I came down for a vacation, and I picked it up in Jacksonville and drove it back to Fort Lauderdale, and then we drove it around down there, and I drove it on back up to Dearborn again.
Mm-hmm.
But they were quite popular, those wood-bodied
cars. Oh, yeah, marvelous. And quite collectible today.
Yeah, we have a dentist friend. He writes to us from up in North Carolina, and he started a club.
Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Woody's they call him, and he writes back and forth, sends mm-hmm. his pictures and all.
Right. Very enthusiastic kind of group.
Yeah.
You also did one for Mercury, too.
Yeah, they were interchangeable bodies, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they were quite popular. There again, they were fragile. I mean, you couldn't leave them out in all the weather. I mean, you keep them varnished.
Were you thinking in the post-war era of coming up with a new Continental?
Yes. How about fix me a little? How about a little scotch?
I'd love one.
Good.
Thank you.
Oh, okay.
Get a little thirsty.
Here.
Why,
that ham, I think it can work.
It was just a lukewarm interest. This would have been 1946.
Yes. Uh-huh.
45 and 46 when we were developing the post-war Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
The Continental didn't command much enthusiasm.
Yes.
On the part of the company. I mean, they were there again. They thought it was just a frivolous thing, you know, and they didn't make any money on the previous one. As a matter of fact, the whole idea was kicked overboard completely.
Really?
Well, what they did, they took a version of that great big Lincoln Cosmopolitan. They called it a Continental, you know.
Yes,
it had some extra trim on it or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I left about that time. I've just forgotten what the outcome was. But they called one version of that, the convertible, I guess they call the convertible car the Continental. That was
mm-hmm.
it.
Yeah.
And,
but the old spirit wasn't there.
No. It was a different thing. That held out until Bill Ford was supposed to design that great big monster, that $10,000.
The so-called Mark II.
Yeah, that didn't go over too well, apparently.
Yeah.
that was about the end of the Continental. Then they did come along with some quite nice ones after that. I guess it was, what, a 72? Had a real nice-looking car, Continental.
Well, they started the Mark III again in 68.
This one had a kind of a little fine grill. Abby? What Continental was that the gent had down at the boat works there? You remember that nice Continental he was going to restore?
You mean what year?
Yeah, was that to be about a 71 or 72 or something?
I think it was a 71.
Yeah, real neat looking car.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, it just got to be a big ponderous tub
now
again.
That was a very
nice, delicate detail on it.
It was a, as you say, neat is the best word I can think
of. Yeah.
Here's your steering wheel design.
That's it.
Came out. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. One of the two spokes.
Yeah, that's the first version of it, I guess. Yeah. It's about
Well, you'll have generations of drivers blessing you for that innovation.
Oh, of course. Right after that, all sorts of versions of it came out.
Mm-hmm.
Some simple.
Right.
And then it became more detailed and all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Dave, there you go.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm, you bet.
Yeah.
Honey, you want soda and vodka?
Yeah, that'll be fine. Thirsty. Yeah, that's, here you see this is the first Mercury here.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Ford wanted a Ford-looking car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, this was supposed to be part of the Ford package.
He didn't want a new one.
He didn't want a new one. I you couldn't talk him into anything that deviated very far from it. And I went through I was going to do up something entirely different.
Right.
No way.
Mm-hmm.
No way. He wanted the Ford look. This was to enhance the Ford line, see?
Mm-hmm. Right.
That was to be a Ford family of cars.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't sway him, and I almost got my nose punched by getting into the extent that I did.
That was
the only cross words I ever had with Mr. Ford.
That's marvelous.
And,
you mentioned the various hubcaps that you had.
Where the hell did you ever dig all this stuff out?
Oh, they're all around.
Yeah.
Here you go, sweetie.
Thank you, man. Yeah, these are some that we had ready when Mr. Ford came back on the train that morning. all the boys in the office, I told them about this little set too. They knew, of course, when Mr. Ford came in. We had that little discussion that afternoon about the Mercury name, and they said, "Well, we wish you luck." So when I came back from New York, I told him about what took place in Mr. Ford. I said, he's due to be in here right after lunch. I said, let's get the display ready. We already have the hubcaps, samples we've made up.
Right.
And I said, get them set up on a rack there.
Well, that was probably the most effective way of doing it, because then he could see it.
Oh, yeah.
Rather than we
didn't thrust them at him until I knew he was going to get this flack when he went down to the automobile show, because the sales manager had called me up and they told me they were going to go after him,
So he was pretty much halfway converted when he came back.
Oh, yeah. I said, I'm glad you're taking care of it for me. I said, I've already been burnt. I said, we've got the stuff there. I was entirely in sympathy with him, I'd had several calls. I said, I don't know what we're going to do. After all, the guy runs the company, it's his, and you can't tell him to do this, tell him to do that. He's going to have to learn the hard way.
Right.
And I said, we're up against the fact that the car sounds like a Ford, and we know that the competitive trade is telling me to get down your knees, look under there, and see if it isn't a Ford underneath, see? The radius rods, and turn it up, the muffler sounds the same, the engine sounds the same,
mm-hmm.
looks the same.
Right.
I said, guys, let's get some differences. At least get the name off the glass. The sales managers of the different branches around the country would call me up, see?
Mm-hmm.
And they had the same idea that I had. I said, my guy, you raise the hood and that's on the battery and so what the public thinks, hell, it's just a Ford.
Right.
And they want $200 more for it, see? Big deal, $200.
Yeah. A different grill and a little sheet metal,
You say $200 now, my God, they want $600-$700 for the damn air cooler, or air conditioner in it.
Incredible. Just incredible. Some of the men that John Najar mentioned who were your apprentices or interns, as it were, you mentioned Bud Adams.
Yeah.
Who still lives in, still very much alive, lives in Arizona.
He does? Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's still very much
alive. He's the boy that worked with me on the little clay model of the...
so you mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of the, which? The
The Continental.
The Continental, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he did the clay model for you.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Right. We both worked on it, parked together there. And
mm-hmm.
He was a nice lad. He was.
He has sent me some tapes that he's done, and I'm going to talk with him further on that.
Yeah.
Benny Barbera.
Yeah.
What was his particular forte? Do you remember?
Oh, he was one of the clay modelers there.
Was he? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We had a group of maybe 7 or 8 clay modelers.
Mm-hmm. He's still going strong.
We had a couple of Italian boys there. I'm trying to think of the name. Real Italianos.
Really.
He probably mentioned the names. I just forgot.
Frank Beyer. Do you remember Frank
Beyer?
Yeah. What did he do?
Gosh, no.
You see, one of the workers.
I tell you, they all pinch hit on so many different activities.
That's good.
Some of them did carpenter work, some did little sheet metal work, and
very adaptable.
Yeah. They mixed up all the way around. Mm-hmm. There were only a few real specialists that we had.
Mm-hmm. You've talked about Frank Francis.
Yeah.
And of course, John Najar.
Frank Francis, I named him.
You remember Emmett O'Rear?
Oh, sure.
What was Emmett doing?
Emmett was a draftsman, a detailed draftsman, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Emmett O'Rump, we used to call him.
Emmett O'Rump?
I named him Emmett O'Rump.
And then, of course, Bob Thomas.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he was worked on truck designs.
Does he?
Yeah, he more or less specialized on that.
Specialized on trucks.
Yeah.
Then there was, you mentioned Ross Cousins, who was an illustrator.
Yeah, illustrator.
And someone you haven't mentioned, Tucker Medwick.
Oh, yeah, he was a nice boy, too. He was one of the modelers.
Was he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he tried to come to our meeting there, you know, he wasn't able to get away from whatever he did there.
Mm-hmm.
Duncan McCray.
Yeah, they came as a group from the Ford Trade School.
You said Duncan.
Oh, yeah, sorry to hear that.
Really,
Duncan couldn't have been over, 68?
Mm-hmm.
65.
Right.
When are they retired? 65?
65 there, yeah.
Well, that'd been 10 years ago. He's probably 75. God, it doesn't seem possible. Those boys, they were 18, 19 years old when they came to work for me.
Incredible.
I was only in my small
20s.
Early 20s. Did you tell David, but it was kind of interesting that when we went up there, we asked to be met.
Oh, yeah. They met us at the...
Well, you know, and we were just expecting a driver to come to meet us with a car.
This is when you were being inducted into the AACA Emeritus Membership, or honorary membership.
No, they just had this Greenfield Village celebration. They had a parade and... I've got a little book in here.
Yeah, Man of the Year.
That's right. So they had two. They usually have two.
Mm-hmm.
And
the
then president of the Ford Motor Company of Canada. He was there, and he was honored on Saturday
right.
or Sunday, and I was honored on Saturday, and so on and so
mm-hmm.
forth.
See? Right. Mm-hmm.
What I was going to say was that instead of just sending anybody to meet us, they sent Bob Thomas and Duncan and Craig right there at the plane when we got off. That was a thrill for Bob.
That must have been,
I hadn't seen him in 28 years.
The gentleman who wrote the Edsel Marketeer in 1958 has...
Bill Last. That's a story in itself. They sent him down. We were laying at Elizabeth City, North Carolina, with the mm-hmm. boat.
Right.
And they sent him down there, and it turned into a 3-day party. And hell of a swell guy.
Well, he had a marvelous quote from you, or a marvelous anecdote from you. He says, in the styling department, Bob Gregory kept a number of old prototype cars for reference.
Yeah.
And that they stood in a dark corner covered with dust sheets. And at moments when business affairs grew too oppressive, Edsel Ford would appear in the studio, climb into one of his sheeted cars, and beckon to his lieutenant, Bob Gregory.
He's hiding from the old man, see?
He said, and there he would sit, you recall, in the cool dark to meditate and talk to you, and Mr. Ford just seemed to relax.
It was just a kind of a nice, subdued light, old white dust sheets they stood over him, you know, and it was cool in there, and when he didn't want to be disturbed, he'd just climb in there. We'd sit in there and talk about cars and various things, and we could see out, but nobody... and those nice big soft seats. He said, "Geez, I wish I could sit here all afternoon." He said, "They're comfortable and nice." Poor man, my God, I'm telling you. He'd just like to go back in there and maybe spend a half hour, an hour, you know, and rest himself.
Did you have much to do with Larry Sheldrick's end of the business? Did you work with him?
I worked with Sheldrick, sure. We had to cooperate. Sheldrick was chassis engineer, engine engineer and so on.
Was he good to work with?
No.
No, he wasn't.
He was a peppery little bugger. Did you ever meet him?
No.
He was a good engineer. He'd come up, you know, through Model A days and so on. And but he was, like most small men, he was very assertive and
aggressive.
He was a hard-boiled.
Mm-hmm.
And... He made it tough. And there again, I was a considered an upstart. And He just couldn't realize that Mr. Ford had trusted me to design a chassis and a suspension system, see?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Inasmuch as my work had been primarily artwork.
Yes.
And
you were always considered artist.
Yes. I said, hell, I'm no artist. I've worked on diesel engines and crawled into cars all my life.
Right.
I don't want I never allowed the arty aspect to come into the department.
No.
I said, I run this like I would a shipyard or a boatyard, see?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want any of the affectations of artwork.
Right.
I said, this is a design department, and it's a business.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have to get your hands dirty, see?
Mm-hmm.
And I have to mix it occasionally with these chassis people, you know, to get what we want. And they say, you can't do this and you can't do that. Well, I said, look, I'll show you how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll show you how to do it. See, it doesn't work, see?
Yeah.
And about clearances and things like that, see?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I know it'll work.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally got my way. And of course, once I showed Mr. Ford and he liked it, why, we ran over him like a steamroller, see? And, oh boy, they disliked me. And I mean, I made it embarrassing for them.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, certain of them, like Farkas,
mm-hmm.
Gene,
yeah.
Farkas,
yeah, Gene Farkas,
who was an engine designer,
mm-hmm.
and Gene and I were just, we could see, and Gene would always want me to come into the dynamometer room and look at the engines he designed and listen to them and ask me what I thought, see?
Mm-hmm.
I knew all about bore and stroke, and I knew about bearings and lubrication systems and cooling systems.
Mm-hmm.
I'd fussed around with Dad and I with his foreign cars ever since I was a tiny kid.
Right.
And I pointed out certain things, and he appreciated it. And when I ran into a problem, I'd get a hold of Gene, and we'd work together on it.
Mm-hmm.
And he appreciated the fact that I worked up that suspension.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Sheldrick, on the other hand, he said, "Oh, Mr. Ford getting that thing to kill himself. Yes. He said, it might be dangerous to drive." And I said, hell, I've driven that thing over sides of hills and up over all kinds of damned obstructions and put thousands of miles on it on the test track myself.
Hmm.
And there it is. We put it back on the big surface plate and checked it up, and everything just checked right out like it come off a production line. I said, that thing was built on a surface plate, and we have all the dimensions and fits.
Mm-hmm.
So all we did was to scale it, and they drew it up for production in England, see?
Mm.
But it didn't go through Sheldrick's hands at all.
Ah, good. Which one was that? Which one was that?
That's this special built chassis.
Yes.
I'll show you.
Oh, yes, right, yes. One more question I'd like to explore briefly. We have these marvelous photographs and designs of and sketches that you had done during the war. This marvelous anticipation for post-war models.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Can you elaborate on that operation? Was it pretty much your idea?
Yes, to illustrate those.
Yes.
Yeah, well, mm-hmm. That's the reason I got cousins in there to do those illustrations.
Right. Uh-huh.
Yeah, we drew up large sheets of,
mm-hmm.
showing various body types and
mm-hmm.
like more or less like an advertising handout.
Right. Uh-huh.
And I thought, gee, all the designers usually could do, the designers from Briggs and all these people, they'd made these stilted, most of those boys couldn't draw a perspective, you know. They
mm-hmm.
drew a nice side views.
Right.
But they couldn't draw perspectives. But Ross, he could draw, you know, typical advertising illustrator.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd just take a design some of the boys had, or I'd draw up something home over a weekend or something. I'd take it in and ask Ross to blow it up into an illustration, see?
But then you produce these marvelous clays which were done during the war.
That's right.
In anticipation of the post-war market.
That's right.
And many of them, many of the ideas and designs that you came up with were incorporated in some of the
Well, it's like all that. You mean they might pick a grill or a
mm-hmm.
door handle or a
right.
paper shape, you know. And
uh-huh.
They weren't necessarily intended as a complete design.
Uh-huh.
They were just studies for
uh-huh.
composite studies.
Right.
Yeah.
And we've also come up with some of your sketches which show that you were contemplating or at least thinking about a convertible Lincoln after the war.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that was the... That was the Cosmopolitan,
right?
The convertible version of the Cosmopolitan
exactly.
was to be a fancier version of that was to be the Continental.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We even built some chassis in the department. I designed it with a vertical engine and front wheel drive, and we built the whole mock-up of wood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, showing the universal joints and the
right.
and the engine and the whole damn thing, we whittled it all out of wood.
That's marvelous.
And of course, that aggravated the chassis people, and
it
guess is. I guess it would have aggravated us just as well if they started making body shapes. But I knew that Mr. Ford was interested in mechanical innovations of various kinds, and we didn't attempt to go over anyone's head, and we thought we might as well see what we could do. I mean, the matter of fact, the chassis people weren't active at that time at all doing post-war work.
They were doing
we could do it, but they weren't able to do any development work.
So in a sense, you had a little enclave there in the engineering lab that you were able to come up with some rather futuristic designs at the time.
We didn't know, of course, whether all of this was to be held for Mr. Ford's consideration.
Uh-huh.
Matter of fact, some of these things which were done along in, say, in 42, 43, they were ready for presentation for Edsel Ford at the time he died, say.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that accounts for some of these clay models and so on.
Hmm. So he never got a chance to see many of them?
No, not some of those.
He was too busy with the war work.
Well, not only that, but see, he passed out of the picture as of about the first of the year.
That's right.
43. He was in Florida until along in March, late March, I guess, before he came back, and then he just came in that one day. And matter of fact, he didn't even see the models. He just sat down in the office.
Oh, that's too bad. You didn't have a chance to take him back and show him?
No, he was in bad shape then. He said he was feeling badly, and he had to be excused. He was going home. That was the last time I saw him.
That's too bad. Did you know Charlie Waterhouse is still alive?
I don't know.
Charlie,
yes, sure.
Yes.
Is he?
I've talked to him, yes.
Charlie came from an old line of bodybuilders, you know. He's a fine boy.
Was he from the Waterhouse
body
company?
Yeah, in Massachusetts, Webster, Mass.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It was his son. He'd done body drafting for them, you know.
Had he?
And we had quite a collection of representative custom body Brun and Rigitko from Willoughby and Waterhouse. And they were not hired because they were with other companies. I got them fresh from the from the roost.
That's great. Yeah.
Yeah, they were all excellent. There's that little, Ford boat tail I built in 32.
Mm-hmm.
We had a little Jew. His name was Rosie, and he was an expert metal beater.
Mm-hmm.
He beat those fenders out on a big leather bag filled with shot. He'd take that leather panel and he'd put it on his knee and he'd stand there and he'd pound it. He learned in the old country. He made great big pots or some kind of metalware.
Mm-hmm.
He was a little Jew about that high. And he called him Rosie. And man, he'd beat, hour after hour. And he'd shape that metal around into the most beautiful shapes by hand.
Mm.
That was the type of thing you'd never ever find today.
Well, according to this article, The second one that you did is still owned by, hopefully, by Mr. Polish.
Yeah, Mr. Potash.
Polish.
Boy, he turned out to be a nuisance, that guy.
Really?
Yeah.
I know. He was so enthused. He was from over here in DeLand.
Oh, was he?
And his son found the car. I don't know. It had been in California. They made
That's
a moving
right.
picture or something.
Mm-hmm,
and he found it in Pensacola. Some sailor had bought it and had driven it to Pensacola, some damn thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he got a hold of it. And he spread the word around that was the first Mercury.
Oh.
First Mercury.
Mm.
And he called me up and came over, and he'd written this story in a magazine and was going to write a book about it and all that sort of thing. And I said, my God, that car is not a Mercury. It had nothing to do with Mercury. And he said, well, how do you know? I said, I know all about that car. I said, frankly, I live with it while it's being built. I drew every line on it.
Of course. Yeah.
And so I don't know where it is now. It was over in Orlando, in DeLand, last time I know.
Well, I think
still in DeLand, yeah.
Is it?
Well, he still has it.
Yeah.
He's put a Merc flathead in it, apparently.
Has he?
Yeah. There's a note on here, notation on one of the photographs here, Edsel says, this form is very good, but wonder if two grills shouldn't join.
Well, that was the little wooden model.
Yeah, that was
the little model I made for the wind tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And as the caption says, it looks like you decided against it.
I don't remember how that was. This was the version that was finished up.
Mm-hmm.
And
but he hasn't and so forth.
Oh, well, this was a this was an early
early model.
This was just an improvised, a little wood quarter size,
right.
A little quarter size model.
But he wondered there on the notation that he wondered if the two grills shouldn't be moved together. I guess you talked him out of it.
I've just forgotten what the problem was. Maybe we couldn't cool it or something. We didn't get enough air into
uh-huh.
it.
Yeah.
But this was the final version of it here.
Mm-hmm.
It did have some trouble cooling it. It was paneled over the whole bottom of it was paneled.
Uh-huh.
And we had a little problem getting rid of the hot air in there. We finally put some louvers in the bottom of it.
Mm-hmm.
But,
Well, you've had an incredible career. You must have had a lot of fun.
The research that you've done to dig up all this stuff, I mean, you're running ahead of me as far as memory goes. I have to back off on a sidetrack and can't take another aim at it. Yeah, this was a cute little car. This is just on a standard first Ford V8 chassis.
Was he?
32,
was
yeah.
32, huh?
Mm-hmm. But it was beautifully finished.
Did you hop
finished.
Up the engine at all?
No.
No.
Uh-huh. I think Mr. Ford did have a new engine put in it later on, a peppier engine or something.
Yeah.
But originally it was just a standard. It'd go about 85 miles an hour, 90 miles an hour.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's pretty good, don't
they? Yeah, I drove it 90 miles an hour.
Did you really? Mm.
It was a cute little car. But I don't know, those little tight shoebox things, they never appealed to me too much. he liked them, and wouldn't it be nice to own an automobile company like that and build just what you want like that?
Oh, it sure wouldn't.
Oh, gee.
Yeah.
That was one of his early ones, I guess.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
He was one of the early hot rodders.
Yeah. But, you know, he was a great gent. I built I don't have a picture of it, but I took a two-door, Ford two-door. All this would have been about a 38. Yeah. And I blanked out the rear quarter window, sent mm-hmm. it over the Lincoln plant,
mm-hmm.
and had it filled in and paneled with Londo leather,
uh-huh.
like some of the custom-built Lincolns.
Right.
And it was all trimmed with pigskin. Gee, it was a beautiful thing, and I had a special paint job put on at the Lincoln plant,
mm-hmm.
and I told him what I had in mind, showed him a little sketch of it. He said, well, we have to do those things to find out, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
He says, okay, go ahead, show it to me when you get through. It must have cost $50,000, but he said, we have to do those things,
sure.
don't we?
Yeah.
I said, yes.
That's marvelous.
So he drove it home one night, and he said, gee, that's nice and quiet. It rides nice with all that padding on the roof, you know,
mm-hmm.
see?
Yeah.
And, well, we had considered, talked about it for just like all these things I was talking about. He always loved the idea of a special build, a little custom version of a Ford, see?
Mm-hmm.
The basic Ford, but let's do something to it to make it a little different.
Mm-hmm.
And that came along in that of that category.
Mm-hmm.
And so he'd allow me just enough leeway to do that, and then I usually acquired